satchel-mouth lit the coach lamps.
"Hurry up, man!" shouted Cleet. "We want to catch them, you know!"
I don't see that it matters much if they get away,"
Satchel-mouth grumbled, climbing onto the coach as Cleet lashed the horses into motion. "I mean, they're away. That's all that matters, isn't it?"
"No! You saw them. They're the soul of all this trouble," said Cleet. "We can't let this sort of thing go on."
Satchel-mouth glanced sideways. The thought was flooding into his mind, and not for the first time, that Mr. Cleet was not playing with a full orchestra, that he was one of those people who built their own hot madness out of sane and chilly parts. Satchel-mouth was by no means averse to the finger foxtrot and the skull fandango, but he'd never murdered anyone, at least on purpose. Satchel-mouth had been made aware that he had a soul, and though it had a few holes in it and was a little ragged around the edges, he cherished the hope that some day the god Reg would find him a place in a celestial combo. You didn't get the best gigs if you were a murderer. You probably had to play the viola.
How about if we leave it right now, he said. They won't be back.
Shut up!
But there's no point.
The horses reared. The coach rocked. Something went past in a blur and vanished in the darkness, leaving a line of blue flames that flickered for a little while and then went out. Death was aware that at some point he would have to stop. But it was creeping up on him that in whatever dark vocabulary the ghost machine had been envisaged, the words slow down were as inconceivable as drive safely. It was not in its very nature to reduce speed in any circumstances other than the dramatically calamitous at the end of the third verse. That was the trouble with music with rocks in. It liked to do things its own way. Very slowly, still spinning, the front wheel rose off the ground. Absolute darkness filled the universe. A voice spake.
"Is that you, Cliff?"
"Yep." Yeah.
"Okay. Is this me, Glod?"
"Yep, sounds like you."
"Asphalt?"
"It's me.
Buddy?"
"Glod?"
"And, lady in black?"
"Yes."
"Do you know where we are, miss?"
There was no ground under them, but Susan didn't feel that she was floating, she was simply standing. The fact that it was on nothing was a minor point. She wasn't falling because there was nowhere to fall to or from. She'd never been interested in geography, but she had a very strong feeling that this place was not locatable on any atlas.
"I don't know where our bodies are," she said carefully.
"Oh, good," said the voice of Glod. "Really, I'm here, but we don't know where my body is. How about my money?"
There was the sound of faint footsteps far away in the darkness. They approached slowly and deliberately and stopped. A voice said, one, two, one, two. Then the footsteps went back into the distance. After a while, another voice said, 1, 2, 3, 4. And the universe came into being. It was wrong to call it a big bang. That would just be noise. And all that noise would create is more noise and a cosmos full of random particles. Matter exploded into being, apparently as chaos. But in fact as a cord, the ultimate power cord. Everything altogether streaming out in one huge rush that contained within itself, like reverse fossils, everything that it was going to be. And zigzagging through the expanding cloud, alive, that first wild live music. This had shape. It had spin. It had rhythm. It had a beat. And you could dance to it. Everything did. A voice right inside Susan's head said,
"And I will never die."
She said aloud,
"There's a bit of you in everything that lives."
"Yes, I am the heartbeat, the backbeat." She still couldn't see the others. The light was streaming past her.
"But he threw away the guitar. I wanted him to live for me."
"You wanted him to die for you in the wreckage of the cart."
"What is the difference? He would be dead anyway. But to die in music... People will always remember the songs he never had the chance to sing, and they will be the greatest songs of all. Live your life in a moment, and then live forever. Don't fade away.
Send us back."
"You never left.
She blinked. They were still on the road. The air flickered and crackled, and was full of wet snow. She looked around into Buddy's horrified face.
"We've got to get away."
She held up a hand. It was transparent. Cliff had almost vanished. Glod was trying to grip the handle of the money bag, but his fingers were slipping through it. His face was full of the terror of death, or possibly of poverty. Susan shouted,
"He threw you away! That's not fair!"
A piercing blue light was heading up the road. No cart could move that fast. There was a roar like the scream of a camel who has just seen two bricks. The light reached the bend, skidded, hit a rock, and leapt into space over the gorge. There was just time for a hollow voice to say, "Oh, bugger!" before it hit the far wall in one great spreading circle of flame. Bones bounced and rolled down to the riverbed and were still. Susan spun around, scythe ready to swing. But the music was in the air, it had no soul to aim for. You could say to the universe, "This is not fair," and the universe would say, "Oh, isn't it? Sorry." You could save people. You could get there in the nick of time, and something could snap its fingers and say, "No, it has to be this way. Let me tell you how it has to be. This is how the legend has to go." She reached out and tried to take Buddy's hand. She could feel it, but only as a coldness.
"Can you hear me?" she shouted above the triumphant chords.
He nodded.
It's like a legend. It has to happen, and I can't stop it. How can I kill something like music?"
She ran to the edge of the gorge. The cart was well on fire. They wouldn't appear in it. They would have been in it.
"I can't stop it. It's not fair."
She pounded at the air with her fists.
"Grandfather!"
Blue flames flickered fitfully on the rocks of the dry riverbed. A small finger bone rolled across the stones until it came up against another, slightly larger bone. A third bone tumbled off a rock and joined them. In the semi-darkness there was a rattling among the stones, and a handful of little white shapes bounced and tumbled between the rocks until a hand, index finger reaching for the sky, rose into the night. Then there was a series of deeper, more hollow noises, as longer, larger things skipped end on end through the gloom.
"I was going to make it better!" shouted Susan. "What's the good of being death if you have to obey idiot rules all the time?"
"Bring them back!"
As Susan turned, a toe bone hopped across the mud and scuttled into place somewhere under Death's robe. He strode forward, snatched the scythe from Susan, and in one movement whirled it over his head and brought it down on the stone. The blade shattered. He reached down and picked up a fragment. It glittered in his fingers like a tiny star of blue ice.
"It was not a request."
When the music spoke, the falling snow danced.
"You can't kill me."
Death reached into his robe and brought out the guitar. Bits of it had broken off, but this didn't matter. The shape flickered in the air, the strings glowed. Death took a stance that Crash would have died to achieve, and raised one hand. In his fingers the silver glinted. If light could have made a noise, it would have flashed, ting.
"He wanted to be the greatest musician in the world. There has to be a law. Destiny runs its course."
For once, Death appeared not to smile. He brought his hand down on the strings. There was no sound. There was instead a cessation of sound, the end of a noise which Susan realized she'd been hearing all along, all the time, all her life. A kind of sound you never notice until it stops. The strings were still. There are millions of chords, there are millions of numbers, and everyone forgets the one that is zero. But without the zero, numbers are just arithmetic. Without the empty chord, music is just noise. Death played the empty chord. The beat slowed and began to weaken. The universe spun on, every atom of it. But soon the whirling would end, and the dancers would look around and wonder what to do next.
"It's not time for that. Play something else."
"I cannot."
Death nodded towards Buddy.
"But he can."
He threw the guitar towards Buddy. It passed right through him. Susan ran and snatched it up, holding it out.
"You've got to take it. You've got to play. You've got to start the music again."
She strummed frantically at the strings. Buddy winced.
"Please," she shouted, "don't fade away."
The music screamed in her head. Buddy managed to grasp the guitar, but stood looking at it as if he'd never seen it before.
"'What'll happen if he doesn't play it?' said Glod.
"'You'll all die in the wreckage.'
"'And then,' said Death, "'the music will die, and the dance will end. "'The whole dance.'
"'The ghostly dwarf gave a cough.
"'We're getting paid for this number, right?' he said.
"'You'll get the universe.
"'And free beer?'
"'Buddy held the guitar to him. "'His eyes met Susan's. "'He raised his hand and played. "'The single chord ran out across the gorge "'and echoed back with strange harmonics.
"'Thank you,' said Death.
"'He stepped forward and took the guitar. "'He moved suddenly and smashed the thing against a rock. "'The strings parted, and something accelerated away "'towards the snow and the stars. "'Death looked at the wreckage with some satisfaction.
"'Now that's music with rocks in!'
"'He snapped his fingers.
"'The moon rose over Ankh Morpork. "'The park was deserted. "'The silver light flowed over the wreckage of the stage, "'and the mud and half-consumed sausages "'that marked the spot where the audience had been. "'Here and there it glinted off broken sound traps.' And after a while some of the mud sat up and spat out some more mud.
"'Crash? Jimbo? Scum?' it said. "'Is that you, Noddy?'
said a sad shape, hanging from one of the stage's few remaining beams. The mud pulled some more mud out of its ears.
"'Right. Where's Scum?'
"'I think they threw him into the lake.
Is Crash alive?'
There was a groan from under a heap of wreckage.
"'Pity,'
said Noddy, with feeling. A figure emerged out of the shadows, squelching. Crash half-crawled, half-fell out of the rubble.
"'You've got to admit,'
he mumbled, because at some stage in the performance a guitar had hit him in the teeth.
"'That wolf, music, with Roxine.'
"'All right,' said Jimbo, and slithered off his beam. "'But next time, thanks all the same, I'd rather try sex and drugs.' "'My dad said he'd kill me if I took drugs,'
said Noddy.
"'This is your brain on drugs,'
said Jimbo.
"'No, this is your brain, Scum, on this lump here.'
"'Oh, cheers, thanks.'
"'A painkiller would be favourite right now,' said Jimbo.
A little closer to the lake, a heap of sacking slid sideways.
"'It's Arch-Chancellor?'
"'Yes, Mr. Stibbons?'
I think someone trod on my hat.'
"'So what?'
"'It's still on my head.'
Ridcully sat up, easing the ache in his bones.
"'Come on, lad,' he said. "'Let's go home. I'm not sure that I'm interested in music any more. It's a world of hurts.'
A coach rattled along the winding mountain road. Mr. Cleet was standing on the box, whipping the horses. Satchelmouth got unsteadily to his feet. The cliff edge was so close he could see right down into the darkness.
"'I've just had about altogether too much of this by half,'
he shouted, and tried to snatch at the whip.
"'Stop that! We'll never catch up with them!'
shouted Cleet.
"'So what? Who cares? I liked their music!'
Cleet turned. His expression was terrible.
"'Traitor!'
The butt end of the whip caught Satchelmouth in the stomach. He staggered back, clutched at the edge of the coach, and dropped. His outflung arm caught hold of what felt like a thin branch in the darkness. He swung wildly over the drop until his boots got a purchase on the rock, and his other hand gripped a broken fence post. He was just in time to see the cart rumble straight on. The road, on the other hand, curved sharply. Satchelmouth shut his eyes and held on tight until the last scream and crackle and splinter had died away. When he opened them, it was just in time to see a burning wheel bounce down the canyon.
"'Blimey,' he said. "'It was lucky there was something.'
His gaze went up. And up.
"'Yes, it was. Wasn't it?'
Mr. Cleet sat up in the ruins of the cart. It was clearly very much on fire. He was lucky, he told himself, to have survived that. A black-robed figure walked through the flames. Mr. Cleet looked at it. He'd never believed in this sort of thing. He never believed in anything, but if he had believed, he would have believed in someone bigger. He looked down at what he thought was his body and realized that he could see through it, and that it was fading away.
"'Oh, dear!'
he said. The figure grinned and swung its tiny scythe. Much later on, people went down into the canyon and sorted out the remains of Mr. Cleet from the remains of everything else. It wasn't very much. There were suggestions that he was some musician. Some musician had fled the city or something, hadn't he? Or was that something else? Anyway, he was dead now, wasn't he? No one took any notice of the other things. Stuff tended to congregate in the dry riverbed. There was a horse's skull and some feathers and beads, and a few pieces of guitar smashed open like an eggshell, although it would be hard to say what had flown. Susan opened her eyes. She felt wind on her face. There were arms on either side of her. They were supporting her, while at the same time grasping the reins of a white horse. She leaned forwards. Clouds were scudding by far below. "All right," she said. "And now what happens?" Death was silent for a moment.
"History tends to swing back into line. They are always patching it up. There are always some minor loose ends. I dare say some people will have some confused memories about a concert of sorts in the park. But what of it? They will remember things that did not happen."
"But they did happen."
"As well."
Susan stared down at the dark landscape. Here and there were the lights of homesteads and small villages where people were getting on with their lives without the thought of what was passing by high over their heads. She envied them.
"So," she said, "just for an example, you understand, what would happen to the band?"
"Oh, they might be anywhere." Death glanced at the back of Susan's head. "Take the boy, for example. Perhaps he left the big city. Perhaps he went somewhere else. Got a job just to make ends meet. Bided his time. Did it his way."
"But he was due in the drum that night."
"Not if he didn't go there."
"Can you do that? His life was due to end. You said you can't give life."
"Not me. You might."
"What do you mean?"
"Life can be shared."
"But he's gone. It's not as though I'm ever likely to see him again."
"You know you will."
"How do you know that?"
"You've always known. You remember everything. So do I. But you are human and your mind rebels for your own sake. Something goes across, though. Dreams, perhaps. Premonitions. Feelings. Some shadows are so long they arrive before the light."
"I don't think I understood any of that."
"Well, it has been a long day."
More clouds passed underneath.
"Grandfather?"
"Yes."
"You're back?"
"It seems so. Busy, busy, busy."
"So I can stop? I don't think I was very good at it."
"Yes."
"But you've just broken a lot of laws."
"Perhaps they're sometimes only guidelines."
"But my parents still died."
"I couldn't have given them more life. I could only have given them immortality. They didn't think it was worth the price."
"I think I know what they mean."
"You're welcome to come and visit, of course."
"Thank you."
"You will always have a home there, if you want it."
"Really?"
"I shall keep your room exactly as you left it."
"Thank you."
"A mess."
"Sorry?"
"I can hardly see the floor. You could have tidied it up a bit."
"Sorry."
The lights of Quirm glittered below. Binky touched down smoothly. Susan looked around at the dark school buildings.
"So I've also been here all the time," she said.
"Yes, the history of the last few days has been different. You did quite well in your exams."
"Did I? Who sat them?"
"You did."
"Oh," Susan shrugged. "What grade did I get in logic?"
"You got an A."
"Oh, come on. I always get A+.
"You should have revised more." Death swung up into the saddle.
"Just a minute," said Susan quickly. She knew she had to say it.
"Yes?"
"What happened to, you know, changing the fate of one individual means changing the world?"
"Sometimes the world needs changing."
"Oh, grandfather?"
"Yes?"
"The swing," said Susan. "The one down in the orchard. I mean, it was pretty good. A good swing."
"Really?"
"I was just too young to appreciate it."
"You really liked it?"
"It had style. I shouldn't think anyone else ever had one like it."
"Thank you."
"But
All this doesn't alter anything, you know. The world is still full of stupid people. They don't use their brains. They don't seem to want to think straight.
Unlike you.
At least I make an effort. For example, if I've been here for the last few days, who's in my bed now?
I think you just went out for a moonlight stroll.
Oh, that's all right, then. Death coughed.
I suppose...
Sorry?
I know it's ridiculous, really.
What is?
I suppose you haven't got a kiss for your old granddad?
Susan stared at him. The blue glow in Death's eyes gradually faded, and as the light died, it sucked at her gaze so that it was dragged into the eye sockets and the darkness beyond, which went on and on forever. There was no word for it. Even eternity was a human idea. Giving it a name gave it a length. Admittedly, a very long one. But this darkness was what was left when eternity had given up. It was where Death lived, alone. She reached up and pulled his head down and kissed the top of his skull. It was smooth and ivory white like a billiard ball. She turned and stared at the shadowy buildings in an attempt to hide her embarrassment. I just hope I remembered to leave a window open. Oh well, nothing for it. She had to know, even if she felt angry with herself for asking. Look, the people I met, do you know if I ever see them? When she turned back, there was nothing there. There were only a couple of hoof prints fading on the cobbles. There was no open window. She went around to the door and climbed the stairs in the darkness.
Susan?
Susan felt herself fading protectively, out of habit. She stopped it. There was no need for that. There had never been a need for that. A figure stood at the end of the passage in a circle of lamplight. Yes, Miss Butts? The headmistress peered at her as if waiting for her to do something. Are you all right, Miss Butts? The teacher rallied.
Do you know it's gone midnight? For shame, and you're out of bed, and that is certainly not the school uniform.
Susan looked down. It was always hard to get every little detail right. She was still wearing the black dress with lace. Yes, she said, that's right. She gave Miss Butts a bright, friendly smile.
Well, there are school rules, you know, said Miss Butts,
but her tone was hesitant. Susan patted her on the arm.
I think they're probably more like guidelines, don't you, you Lily?
Miss Butts' mouth opened and shut, and Susan realized that the woman was actually quite short. She had a tall bearing and a tall voice and a tall manner, and was tall in every respect, except height. Amazingly, she'd apparently been able to keep this a secret from people.
But I'd better be off to bed, said Susan, her mind dancing on adrenaline. And you too. It's far too late to be wandering around drafty corridors at your age, don't you think? Last day tomorrow, too. You don't want to look tired when the parents arrive.
Thank you, Susan.
Susan gave the forlorn teacher another warm smile and headed for the dormitory, where she undressed in the dark and got between the sheets. The room was silent except for the sound of 9 girls breathing quietly and the rhythmic muffled avalanche that was Princess Jade asleep. And after a while the sound of someone sobbing and trying not to be heard. It went on for a long time. There was a lot of catching up to do. Far above the world, Death nodded. You could choose immortality, or you could choose humanity. You had to do it for yourself. It was the last day of term, and therefore chaotic. Some girls were leaving early, there was a stream of parents of various races, and there was no question of there being any teaching. It was generally accepted all round that the rules were relaxed. Susan, Gloria, and Princess Jade wandered down to the floral clock. It was 9:45. Susan felt empty, but also stretched like a string. She was surprised sparks weren't coming from her fingertips. Gloria had bought a bag of fried fish from the shop in 3 roses. The smell of hot vinegar and solid cholesterol rose from the paper, without the taint of fried rot that normally gave the shop's produce its familiar edge.
My father says I've got to go home and marry some troll, said Jade. Hey, if there's any good fish bones in there, I'll have them.
Have you met him? Said Susan.
No, but my father says he's got a great big mountain.
I wouldn't put up with that if I was you, said Gloria through a mouthful of fish.
This is the century of the fruit bat, after all. I'd put my foot down right now and say no. Eh, Susan?
What? Said Susan, who'd been thinking of something else.
Then, when everything had been repeated, she said, "No, I'd see what he was like first. Perhaps he's quite nice. And then, the mountain is a bonus."
"Yes, that's logical. Didn't your dad send you a picture?" said Gloria.
"Oh, yes," said Jade.
"Well?"
"It had some nice crevices," said Jade thoughtfully, "and a glacier that my father says is permanent even at midsummer."
Gloria nodded approvingly.
"He sounds a nice boy. But I've always liked Crag from the next valley. Father hates him, but he's working very hard and saving up, and he's nearly got enough for his own bridge."
Gloria sighed.
"Sometimes it's hard to be a woman," she said.
She nudged Susan.
"Want some fish?"
"I'm not hungry, thanks."
"It's really good. Not stale old stuff like it used to be."
"No, thanks."
Gloria gave her another nudge.
"Want to go and get your own, then?"
she said, leering behind her beard.
"Why should I do that?"
"Oh, quite a few girls have gone down there today," said the dwarf.
She leaned closer.
"It's the new boy working there," she said. "I'd swear he's elvish."
Something inside Susan was plucked and went twang. She stood up.
"So that's what he meant. Things that haven't happened yet."
"What? Who?" said Gloria.
"The shop in Three Roses Alley."
"That's right."
The door to the wizard's house was open. The wizard had put a rocking chair in the doorway and was asleep in the sun. A raven was perched on his hat. Susan stopped and glared at it.
"And have you got any comment to make?"
"Croak, croak," said the raven, and ruffled its feathers.
"Good," said Susan.
She walked on, aware that she was blushing. Behind her a voice said, "Ha!" and she ignored it. There was a blur of movement among the debris in the gutter. Something hidden by a fish wrapper went...
"Oh, yes, very funny," said Susan.
She walked on, and then broke into a run. Death smiled and pushed aside the magnifying lens and turned away from the Discworld to find Albert watching him.
"Just checking," he said.
"That's right, Master," said Albert. "I've saddled up, Binky."
"You understand, I was just checking."
"Right you are, Master."
"How are you feeling now?"
"Fine, Master."
"Still got your bottle?"
"Yes, Master."
It was on the shelf in Albert's bedroom. He followed Death out into the stable yard, helped him into the saddle, and passed up the scythe.
"And now I must be going out," said Death.
"That's the ticket, Master."
"So stop grinning like that."
"Yes, Master."
Death rode out, but found himself guiding the white horse down the track to the orchard. He stopped in front of one particular tree and stared at it for some time. Eventually he said,
"Looks perfectly logical to me."
Binky turned obediently away and trotted into the world. The lands and cities of it lay before him. Blue light flamed along the blade of the scythe. Death felt a tension on him. He looked up at the universe, which was watching him with puzzled interest. A voice which only he heard said,
"So you're a rebel, little Death. Against what?"
Death thought about it. If there was a snappy answer, he couldn't think of one. So he ignored it and rode towards the lives of humanity. They needed him. Somewhere, in some other world, far away from the Discworld, someone tentatively picked up a musical instrument that echoed to the rhythm in their soul. It will never die. It's here to stay. That is the end of Soul Music by Terry Pratchett, and it was read by Nigel Planer.